Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Let us do this thing.
Let's do it.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense. It's Friday, April the 5th.
And I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl one more day. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast and on the YouTube live stream. This is, of course, Economics on Tap, our weekly happy hour episode.
That's right. We're going to do some news. We're going to take a little break. We're going to play a round of half full, half empty. But of course, before we get into it, we want to know what you're drinking. Hats off to Alcohol Responsibility Month. So I hope everybody's drinking responsibly this month and every month. But let's see. Amy, what do you have?
I didn't know that was a month.
Yes, it's April.
I have to disappear for a second, show you the bottle.
Okay.
So this is, I'm drinking a hometown favorite from Colorado Springs. It's called The Deck. It's a citrus clove liqueur. They call it an après sport because you can see there's a skier on the front. But it's just a warm,
very fancy,
delicious, liqueur. And so I mixed it with some bitters and a splash of soda and a cherry, and it's nice.
You made yourself a proper cocktail.
It's so cold in Baltimore.
I see you.
Yeah,
I
stepped it up.
Ooh, nice glassware and everything.
When I saw that you were going to do something fancy, I felt like maybe the Miller Lite in my fridge wasn't going to cut it. So here we go.
Well, I feel like I've been kind of slacking on the cocktails lately, so I wanted to actually try this week. So I looked at what I had, asked ChatGPT for some advice, did some searching on the internet, and kind of comboed a bunch of different ideas. And I ended up with a cocktail that's like whiskey, green chartreuse, some cherry blossom syrup that I still have because I'm clearly still in cherry blossom mode. And what else is in this? Absinthe and some sparkling water. And, you know, I put a little dehydrated lime on the top. I don't know if you can see it. If I tip it, it'll
fancy.
Spill.
Fancy. Well, and that's a beautiful glass.
Thank you. I got it at Goodwill.
Love it.
That's where I get all my fancy cocktail glasses. But I have no name for it, so I'll rely on the chat and everyone's imagination to see what I should call it.
Oh, fun.
But I like it. I like it.
All
right, let's see what everybody
naming cocktails before.
I think we did. Yeah, when we did our stonk tales, when everybody was doing the meme stocks. We did meme stock cocktails, and I tried to make several of them, and they were interesting. But let's see what everybody's drinking in the chat. Barbara's got a Sauvignon Blanc from South Africa. Lego Warrior, seltzer water and cherry juice. I love it because we're still in cherry blossom. Thomas Moore is drinking water. Expat Mike says good morning from Cherry Blossom Weekend in Central Japan. I've never actually been to Japan or seen the cherry blossoms there, so I'm very jealous of you, Mike. Michael just finished a mezcal margarita. Oh, Chuck, I'm so sorry that you lost your grand cat this week. That's a bummer. Tyler is drinking an old fashioned with the Wisconsin kind with brandy and sweet since you gave up alcohol.
I didn't know there was a Wisconsin kind.
Oh, gosh, that was a whole thing. Wait a minute. If you gave up alcohol for Lent, how are you having a brandy old fashioned? I don't understand. Anyway.
Oh, is that?
Mighty Unlikely is having an Aldi's Blackberry Seltzer. And let's see what else we have. Margie's drinking a Pineapple White Claw. Felicia with the Dragon's Milk Mocha Mint. Okay. Mm. I don't know what that is, but it sounds interesting. Oh, Adam says I should call it the Kai Absinthe. Or the Phil says it should be the
Since
Make
Kai
Me
is
Smart
absent,
Tail.
Am I picking up on a pun there? I like it.
I didn't get that. Thank you, Amy. Yes, Kai's absent. I get it. I like that, Adam. Good
that
job.
That is a good one. But you can only drink it when I'm on the show.
Although Phil says, how about the Make Me Smart Tail?
That's good.
There's an idea. Let's see. What else? What else? What else? Homebrew Saison. Water before day. Let's see what else. Peg is drinking a mango ginger tea. All right. So I'm going to hop really quickly over to the Discord to see what y'all are drinking over there. Ah, okay. Bob from the future has the Free Merlot, which is a non-alcoholic red wine, which I've tried before. And that's for the weekend. Shout out to the non-alcoholic wines, which have gotten a lot better, I think, over the years. And I saw a story in the Washington Post, I think, about how the non-alcoholic beers have gotten so much better as well. Steve's drinking a Diet Coke. Tim has a Carback Hopadilla IPA. The names on these beers are so weird. Okay. Anywho, let's do some news. Amy, what you got?
Okay. Well, I was thinking maybe you should name it like the earthquake special or something because...
Oh, right.
You felt the earthquake here today, right?
Yes. Did you feel it?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I'm in Baltimore. The earthquake was centered in New Jersey, but my husband upstairs did feel it. So I'm thinking, what's wrong with me? I was actually in this closet tracking a story. So maybe I was just concentrating or used to
or
the earth moving when I'm married.
The padding.
Anyway, so yeah, there was this 4.8 magnitude earthquake in the Northeast today. And thankfully, there was no major damage. Several airports did ground flights for a little while just to be safe. But I was, of course, thinking about earthquakes. And Elise Hassan sent me this story from Vox about the much bigger earthquake in Taiwan a few days ago. As you know, that was a much more serious earthquake, 7.4 magnitude. At least 12 people were killed. Hundreds were injured. But I think what's remarkable about that is that the damage wasn't more severe. It was the strongest earthquake in the country in 25 years. But they've adopted really strong building codes and they conduct earthquake drills. And the tallest building apparently moved barely just because of how it was constructed.
Is that the one with the big like ball hanging in the middle of
it? Yes, that is really interesting technology. And the story points out that, you know, not only does this preparation save lives, but there could have been a much more significant global economic impact because so much of the world's semiconductor manufacturing is based in Taiwan. Taiwan makes 80 to 90% of the most advanced computer chips. You know, a lot of that takes place on the other side of the island away from the epicenter, so that's part of it. But in 1999, apparently an earthquake basically shut down the electronics industry for a few weeks. And of course, back then, computer chips were not quite as critical to the global economy. So it just kind of speaks to the fragility of the supply chain and how concentrating industry in high risk places can be risky.
Well, I mean, but given the world, what's not a high risk place?
Very few. Yeah, I mean, Silicon Valley, I think, is on how many faults? So yeah, it's not a problem that's going to be easy to solve, but I think it does speak to how preparation really pays off and strong building
it
codes.
It really doesn't. Yeah. If you get a chance to look at some of the articles about this, I've seen some sort of illustrations and videos showing this giant ball, like literally hanging in the middle of the skyscraper that absorbs the shock of it, which is absolutely wild to me. Okay, cool. I have two health-related stories. The first one is, even though Kai is absent, he would relate to this, which is about absent allergies. Yes, Kai's absent. I'm going to be laughing about that for a while. Story in CNN that says, it's not just you. Here's why pollen allergies are worse than ever. And it says, recent studies have revealed that growing zones in the U.S. are shifting as the climate warms, allowing plants and trees to expand their ranges. Rising temperatures also allowing plants to bloom earlier and longer, prolonging pollen seasons. Increased rainfall means plants release more pollen when they bloom, and higher numbers of thunderstorms cause pollen grains to burst, making them more irritating and worsening symptoms. Shifting wind patterns in some parts of the world are carrying pollen over longer distances, too. Let's also add in that they planted all those male trees in so many cities and because they didn't want female trees because fruit. And that, yeah, I say this as I wipe my eyes because allergies. So it is not just
I'm feeling it coming on.
Yes, I know. I feel like it's psychosomatic in some ways. Like we were talking about it made my eyes itch. So that's one thing. I feel very validated as I've been like, you know, popping allergy pills like candy. But the other story, a lot more serious, good news, the Food and Drug Administration is making plans. I'm quoting here from the Wall Street Journal, to significantly expand the number of gay and bisexual men who can donate sperm anonymously, similar to the rules that banned gay and bisexual men, from donating blood for a long time. They were also prohibited from donating sperm under certain circumstances because of fears of the spread of HIV. Obviously, newer research and more up-to-date information shows that that's not as big of a risk as people thought it was. And so under a proposal in it is drafting, the FDA would eliminate the broad ban and instead adopt more pointed screening questions to assess HIV risk. According to people familiar with the agency's decision, the proposed changes would also apply to donations of all other cells and tissues, such as heart valves and ligaments, all things that people need in emergencies. This is supposed to be finalized by the summer. I think this is particularly important because there is really a shortage of sperm donors for people who are trying to have kids. I mean, there was a story in the Washington Post a while back about how it's particularly difficult for people, for Black women who are trying to find Black sperm donors to get, what they need. And so, like, I'm trying to see here, it's right. Sperm banks, this is back in the Wall Street Journal. Sperm banks have been experiencing shortages of donors, especially donors of color. The COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated the problem as young professionals and university students, who often compose a large portion of prospective donors, left cities. So this is going to mean a lot to a lot of families who rely on sperm donors to have their kids, assuming that IVF is still allowed in the future. But clearly we don't know. There's that.
Yeah. And so those policies really came out of the 1980s AIDS epidemic and the less reliable testing. So the way that officials dealt with it was by just banning this entire group from donating sperm. And that's really outdated because testing has come a long way. And so it's great to see this change for many reasons, as you pointed out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is it for the news. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to play a round of half full, half empty, and we will be right back with that.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.
All right, welcome back. It is now time to play our game, Half Full, Half Empty, hosted by the wonderful Drew Drawstad. Drew, take it away.
All right. First up, are you half full or half empty on X restoring some blue check marks to users that had them taken away?
Kai was so upset.
Yeah. Kai got one.
So for oh, did you have a blue check mark before?
I did have one before, but I didn't get it back. I've basically abandoned X altogether. So, yeah, I don't have a huge following. I'm half empty because what is even going on at that place? I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. It seems like an attempt to stay relevant and, you know,
I mean, they got themselves back in the headlines. They got a bunch of people to log back in who probably hadn't logged back in a while just to check and see if their blue check marks were restored. So as
that's
a gimmick,
right, right.
I guess that works. Half empty Twitter has, I'm sorry, X is not what it need. It's not doing what it needs to be doing, shall I say. But I was very entertained by all of the reactions to it. Michael Harriet had the most entertaining response. Let me see if I can pull it up quickly. Michael Harriet is a writer who writes a great deal about sort of race and ethnicity and culture and things like that. And let me find it, because I sent it to Kai because I was entertained. And Michael Harriet responded.
Kai's response was an expletive.
Yeah, we're not going to say
that. When he got the news.
So Michael Harriet responded to someone who was complaining about the fact that they were getting charged an annual premium for their blue check mark, but all these other people were getting their check marks for free. And Michael Harriet says, "Why are you mad that some people don't have equal access to the same privileges? Now you want X to repay you just because you helped build their platform? It was a different time. Instead of begging for a handout and whining about blue supremacy, maybe you should pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get more followers. Aren't you people tired of playing the victim?"
Oh, that's good.
I was chuckling quite a while as a result of that one. Anywho, all right, what's the next one, Drew?
Half full or half empty on the enduring popularity of denim jeans.
Oh, I love that story. Yeah, Elizabeth Trovall did a great piece about how, like, even though Gen Z tried to kill jeans, they haven't succeeded. This was when Levi's reported its earnings, and they were down, actually, but better than expected. And I, you know, I'm wearing a pair right now. What can I say? That's my thing. That's my uniform. So I'm half full.
I have, like, one, like, kind of base level uniform that I wear from, like, September to May, which tends to be some version of boots, jeans, and a top and or a jacket to go with it. It was funny. One time when Lizzie O'Leary, who used to host Marketplace Weekend, I ran into her at the New York Bureau, and we were wearing literally the same uniform. And we were like, is this the journalist lady uniform? But anyway, I love
boots,
jeans. It is, because I've seen you wear that too.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty much what I live in. Except, yeah, when I have a fancy interview, which doesn't seem to happen
and then
as
you
much
put on
anymore because it's all remote. You know, I do worry about the future of jeans, though, because my children, who are just two kids, but I think pretty representative, don't wear hard pants, what they call hard pants. The youth like comfort and, you know, the whole athleisure trend. It's, you know, it really has eaten into the jeans appeal among younger people. So we'll see if they come
around. I have to say, as I think about it, all of my jeans are stretchy jeans. I don't know that I have any hard pants at all.
Well, they don't understand that they don't have to be hard.
I know. It's like, I don't
it's like anything like, with some form is restricting. Yeah. Yeah.
But I also don't have the body shape to pull off like a tapered leg jean type situation. Anyway, half full on jeans. I'm all for it. They're comfortable. They're durable. Hopefully we can lessen their climate impact and
yeah,
you
good
know,
point.
Find a way to make
good
it work.
Point.
Okay, from 1971 to 2021, multi-generational households the number of multi-generational households in the United States has quadrupled. Are you half full
this
or
is
half
all you,
empty?
Amy.
Oh, I'm half full. I mean, I heard, was it Chris Farrell's piece this morning on the Morning mm-hmm. Report, interviewing a family that lived together, an immigrant family, and talking about how that is a huge support network. And I mean, there are some less positive reasons I think this is happening, because of the cost of housing and the unavailability of housing. But I mean, I think being close to different generations is great for happiness and well-being, generally speaking. So as long as it's not like forced multi-generational living, I'm half full.
I'm half full on multi-generational housing. I think, you know, when I was living abroad, I saw this in practice, and it really was helpful in a lot of ways. And it also taught people, I think they had better ways to manage interpersonal relationships, because if you're sharing space with people across generations, you kind of have to find a way to communicate and talk to people and manage and maintain boundaries and things like that, as long as, you know, there's no like, you know, weird dynamics. But I will say, one of the things I think Chris pointed out in that piece was that some of this has to do with caregiving. And because we have such a shortage of caregivers, whether it be child care or elder care, some of this multi-generational family is as a result of people just needing to be in the spaces for care assistance. And I would rather see better social supports for that. But on the other hand, only because I know so many people, especially people my age, who would like to be out in the workforce more fully, but are now in situations where they have to provide elder care. And even though they love their older loved ones, they would rather there be a system to be taking care of them. Similarly, you know, friends of mine who would rather not have their in-laws or their parents all up in their space, but they need their help with child care.
Yeah, that's why the shed is a good option. If you have a backyard, there's a little separation.
Put the in-laws, or to put the
whoever, whoever needs to be there. I'll take the shed, maybe.
All right, what's next?
Half full or half empty on earthquake memes?
I'm all the way full. I enjoyed it. I especially love the dynamic of all the West Coast people trying to cast shade on the East Coast people for reacting to the earthquake. And I'm on Blue Sky more than I'm on Twitter now. And there were all of these scientists saying, like, look, the East Coast is bedrock, and shakes travel further when it hits a rock as opposed to on the West Coast, where you really don't feel it in a meaningful way when it's a 4.8 or whatever. Anyhow, I don't know any of these things. I'm not an expert in this field, but I'm entertained by the discourse. I'm entertained by the memes. Half full.
Okay, so I missed all the memes. I was not on social media today. Give me a sample.
So healthy. I mean, it was just people reacting, basically talking about how people on the East Coast lose their minds when there's a mild tremor compared to people on the West Coast who are just like,
yes,
it's Tuesday.
And that's true. I was telling somebody, the last one that I felt here in Baltimore was in 2011, I think. And I used to live in California. I know better. But the earth started shaking. And what did I do? I ran for the door. Like, you're supposed to stop and protect yourself, right? Take shelter. You're not supposed to, like, most injuries happen trying to exit the building. So, like, wherever it happens, it's kind of scary. So, you know, go easy on us West Coast people.
The funniest one I saw, only because I related so deeply, is someone said, my Tornado Alley self felt an earthquake and ran to the basement because we're trained. We're trained in a disaster to go to the basement to protect yourself from danger, and that is not what you want to be doing in an earthquake.
Yeah, we should post some like news you can use for people. Don't go to the basement.
Don't go to the basement.
Don't run out the door.
Find a sturdy piece
of furniture, get under it, or a doorway. Right? Are we right, Drew? You live in California.
Yeah,
I think the doorway thing might actually be a myth. I think that you're just supposed to like cover your head, get under a table. Yeah.
Okay. Ah, interesting. It's funny how those things change.
Okay. Is this
not
the 100% last one,
Drew? On that, though I probably should be. Yes, this is the last one.
All right, folks in the YouTube live chat, do not take our advice on emergency preparedness. Get that information from your local emergency management source of whatever that is not us. And if you're in the YouTube live stream, please get ready to vote in our poll. And while you're there, if you can give us a like or a thumbs up or all the things, we'd appreciate it. All right, let's go.
Are you half full or half empty on traveling for the solar eclipse?
My mother is traveling for the solar eclipse because the solar eclipse, like the, what do they call it? The path of
totality.
Totality. Thank you. The path of totality. Oh, wow. That closed super quick. Let's reopen it again. Reopen the poll because it closed like very quickly. Anyway, the path of totality passes through the Bloomington, Indiana, where my mother and her siblings spent a lot of time growing up. And so she and some of her siblings are going up to Bloomington to watch a solar eclipse for the day. I do not envy them the traffic. I'm going to be very content with my partial eclipse here in D.C. and look at it with glasses that I'm going to go get from the library tomorrow. I am not going anywhere. Are you traveling at all?
Yeah, maybe. You may remember I went to St. Louis for the last one. I think you were in town
gosh, we saw each other. That's right. It was all a blur because my sister had just passed and you very kindly came by to visit me and my mom. But yeah, I actually watched the eclipse in St. Louis with my mom. It was a really dark period of time. But that was so nice of you that you came and visited us. Yeah. But did you get to watch the eclipse there?
We did, and it was breathtaking. It was such an incredible experience.
That's right, you brought me glasses.
If I ever had a chance. Yeah, we had an extra pair of glasses, right? Because there was that
shortage. Because we couldn't find them in St. Louis, and you brought us eclipse glasses. Oh my gosh, I had totally forgotten about that. Amy, you're such a good person.
Well, you had a lot going on. But anyway, my husband is like kind of ridiculous about wanting to see it. So he's booked a bunch of different options for us and we're watching the weather. It's so, you know, if the weather's clear in one of the places we can get to, we are probably going to go. So that I'm setting up my answer, but should we see how people answered in the poll?
Yes. Okay. So, solar eclipse travel half full, 64%. Half empty, 35%. So it looks like lots of folks are in favor of travel, but I'm curious if anybody is there. Are you anybody in the chat to tell us where you're actually traveling? Debbie Donovan says, we booked in August. Flights, car rental, hotel. Jin Peck says, family heading to Albion for the day. Let's see. Yeah, okay. And where are you going, Amy?
It depends on the weather. We have a St. Louis plan and we have a Boston plan because actually the weather's looking better in the Northeast right now, like far north, Burlington, Vermont, Maine. But I also have I'm half full, but I also have some guilt about the climate implications of flying to see something. It feels very selfish, honestly, to me.
To see something that lasts 4 minutes.
And yeah. It's such an extraordinary experience. I mean, I don't know if you remember the experience
of
totality,
okay.
But there's nothing
jets,
like it.
So you're going to be okay.
So yeah, I'm not flying my private jet. But anyway, this is a complex thing for our family. I've been feeling a little bit bad about all of these plane tickets that my husband has booked. We'll see if we go anywhere. I'll report back.
Cheryl Lindstrom says we're driving 12 hours to Texas, but Cheryl has family there. Let me hop over to Discord.
I really hope the weather is good in Texas. The forecasts have been a little iffy.
Let's see. Merica from Kansas City is driving from Kansas City to St. Louis on Sunday, but driving south at like 5 a.m. Fair.
Oh, yeah. The traffic.
Yeah. There's jokes about flying to the eclipse because it's very high. Ha 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 ha.
That's good.
All right. Well, I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah, good time for the music.
Yes. Everybody has jokes today. Kai's absent. Oh my gosh. I think that's, you know what? Good. I've decided that's the name of the cocktail. Kai's absent.
Cheers. Love it.
Cheers. That is it for us today. Kai will not be absent. He will be back on Monday with me. And in the meantime, if you have a question or a comment that you want to share with us, leave us a voicemail at 508-UBSMART or email us at makemesmart@marketplace.org. Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Today's episode was engineered by Charlton Thorpe, who's the only one who gives us a warning before we go live. And our intern is Talia Menchaca.
The team behind our Friday game is Jamila Huxtable, Emily McCune, and Antoinette Brock. Marissa Cabrera is our senior producer. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts. And Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital and on demand.
And on demand. There it is. Thanks to everybody who tuned in on the live stream. Y'all are always lots of fun. Let's see. Oh, and there's Jasper hanging out. He wants to be part of the show.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.